I got no place else to go.
Because I don't know if you've, I mean, I don't know if you've ever kind of felt that way where you like feel like you're backed up against the wall. It's like, I can't do anything. If I do this, it's a bad decision. If I do that, it's a bad decision. Maybe you're thinking, gosh, it feels like I just can't win. I just can't get over this. I just can't seem to get beyond this thing. And that's exactly where this woman was. Matter of fact, Sal, go ahead and bring me up my jar real quick here, because this is a story about a woman in a jar. Now, I don't know exactly what the jars look like, but it's a story about a woman with a jar that had a little bit of oil in it. Now, oil is so messy, so I just have water in here. But let's go back a few thousand years, okay? Can we just go back maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 thousand years? I don't know. It's a little while ago. And it's a story about this woman. As a matter of fact, if you guys have got your Bible, 2 Kings, the 4th chapter. 2 Kings, the 4th chapter. The story starts with this woman, and it says this. It says, a certain woman of the wives of the sons of prophet cried out to Elisha, saying, your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor is coming to take my two sons as slaves. So this woman comes to a man named Elijah. And Elijah was kind of like the pastor there, not just like any pastor. He was like the pastor of the nation, kind of like a Billy Graham or a Rick Warren or like somebody like that, like big time. He's like the guy they invited everywhere to go speak. And when the president gets elected, he's the guy who prays for the president. That's who Elisha was. He was like big time like that. And this woman lived back in the day, and her husband was like a preacher as well. Not as big time, but her husband knew Elisha. And they worked together, and Elisha remembered him and all these things, but this woman came to the point in her life where she had no place else to go because her husband died. Now back in the day, today, I mean, if someone passes away, a lot of times it's maybe like a will or a trust or even with it. What happens is there's like Social Security, and there's different things you can lean on. The government will help take care of you and stuff like that. And back in the day, there really wasn't anything like that. This woman had really gotten herself into a pickle, because if your husband died back in the day, well, your husband was the one who did a lot of the business. He's the one who worked the farm. He's the one who kind of protected you. He's the one who really took care of the family. And now in these days, I mean, tons of you guys in this place, maybe you only live with your mom or your grandma, and maybe your mom has a job or two, maybe even three or whatever the case is. Maybe both your folks have jobs, and that's the way things are now in these days. But they were so much different back then. You see, this woman had children, at least two sons. And when her husband died, there went any of their income. The only way that she could get income was maybe to beg, or was maybe to the only way she could do was maybe to begin to sell herself, or even what would happen is this was really common back in the day, is if you couldn't afford to pay your bills, there was no foreclosure. What would happen is the person that you owed money to would come, and they would take your children as slaves. And this happened all the time. So she was ready in the story. She was ready for the man she owed money to. Maybe he owned the house or the farm that she had. Maybe they just had to buy a donkey. And she couldn't pay him back. She was ready for him to come, knock on her door, and say, "Hey, I need your kids. Your kids are going to work my fields until you can pay off this debt." Sometimes they would take the entire family. The wife, the kids, and anything else they had. And there were times where they would work for years and years and years as a slave. And the woman is talking to this man, Elijah, and said, "This is what's happening. He sent me a letter. He's on his way. He's ready to come knock on my door and take away my family." I mean, could you imagine that? She's already lost her husband. She's already lost her husband. And you know what? He must have died early, too, because here's the thing is her kids weren't old enough to take care of her. I mean, if she had kids that were 20, 30, 40 years old, then what could happen is her sons could take care of the farm. Her sons could go out and get jobs on their own. But apparently, her husband must have died early enough, young enough to where the kids, maybe they might have been your guys' age, 10, 11, well, I mean, no 10-year-olds in here, but you know what I'm saying, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, and they weren't yet ready to take care of everything. So here's this young woman with these young kids. She's got nothing left. Nothing left to take care of herself. So she comes up to this man named Elisha, says, Elisha, what am I going to do? And here's the crazy thing. Elisha looks her in the eyes and says, I don't know. What do you want me to do? This is the preacher. He talks to God, and she's asking for advice. And his best advice is, what do you want me to do? It's like, can I take my tithe back? I don't want to give it to you anymore. You know, it's like, seriously. So he says this. He says, you know, what do you have? He says, what do you got? Go look in your house. Go through your drawers. Find something. What do you have? And she goes through and she looks and she says, well, all I got is a jar full of oil. And I think it was like olive oil, because you could do a lot with that. You could burn it for a torch or a lamp. I mean, you could take olive oil and you can make food with it. You can make like bread or cakes or something like that. And that's what they do. You know, they didn't have like KFC or nothing good like that, you know. Although I'm sure there's a lot of oil in KFC. But that's not the point. That chicken skin, man. Tasty stuff. Anyway. So she goes in her house and she looks through her cupboards and she says, all I got is this jar of oil. It's not full, but it's got some in there. He says, all right. Well, that's a good start. He says, here's what I want you to do. Put that jar back in your house. And I want you to go knock on all your neighbors' doors. Knock on door after door after door. And he says, don't knock on a couple doors. I want you to knock on as many doors as you can. And I want you to ask them to borrow something. I want you to ask them if you can borrow a jar. He says, I want you to be a jar collector. I want you to go and ask for as many containers and jars and jugs and buckets and whatever else you can do. Ask for empty ones. Ask them whatever they have left over. Ask them for the ones they haven't used yet, the ones collecting dust. He says, go and begin to collect as many jars as you can and come back. She's like, all right. I ain't got nothing else to do. I got nothing else to lose. So she goes and she begins to knock on doors. She begins to talk to her neighbors. Maybe you know what it's like. You guys don't talk to your neighbors probably. I mean, you probably don't even know your neighbor's name, you know. And back then, they didn't like always live right next to each other. So she starts running around and she starts knocking on doors and she collects all these jars and she gets them and she brings them to her house and she says, Elijah, okay, what am I gonna do next? I got all these jars now. What am I gonna do? You know, am I gonna start like one of those jar bands and make those little noises? What am I gonna do? And he says, here's what I want you to do. Get your kids. Bring your boys. Go into the house. So shut the door. You and your kids, go in the house alone, shut the door. I want you to take that one jar you do have of oil. I want you to go get it and line up all the empty jars. Take it. I'm going to pour the oil out into the jars. That don't make no sense. If you got a jar that's barely even full, maybe halfway, and you want me to pour it into the other jars? That doesn't make any sense. But she says, well, I got nothing left to lose. What do I got left to lose? I already look stupid in front of all my neighbors because I asked them for other jars. They know I'm broke. They know my husband's dead. You must think I'm crazy. There's the jar lady. It's like, children, don't talk to her. That's the jar lady. So what's that tinkling noise? Oh, it's the jar lady. It's like, where's my cat? I can't find. Oh, the jar lady must have taken it. You know what I'm saying? You guys know, like, the cat lady down the street or that one person with all the dogs? Maybe you're the one with all the dogs. You're that person. You might be the jar lady. So what else is she going to do? What else has she got to lose? So she lines all the jars up. She tells her kids, Mijo, get in here. Get in here. Put that stick down. And she gets her kids, her two boys in there. She gives them jobs. She says, all right, you get me a jar. So, okay, mommy, okay. So she gets the jar. She has hers. And she begins to pour it out. And the Bible says that she poured the jar out, and it filled the empty jar. She said, okay, well, put this on the shelf. Mijo, because, you know, I'm sure that's kind of like Hebrew. She says, Mijo, get me another jar. She pours it out. All right, put this on a shelf. Get me another jar. Pours it out. Fills it up. Get me another jar. Pours it out. Puts it on a shelf. Gets another jar. And the Bible says that jar after jar after jar, as long as she kept on pouring, the jars kept on getting filled up. Jar after jar. And the Bible says that each jar was filled by the one that was partially filled. And it says, until there were no jars left. And she filled jar after jar. And it only stopped when the jars stopped. So there she is with a house full of oily jars. So she's like, well, there's no more jars. I don't know what to do with this. This is a really dangerous, flammable house now. So she goes out and says, hey, Elijah, I think it worked. I don't know what was supposed to happen, but it happened. And I have a house full of jars of oil. He says, great. Take those jars, load them up on something, go to market, sell them. Sell all of them at market. And when you're done selling them, take the money, pay off the guy you owe money to, the mafia or whatever. And he says, now with whatever's left over, live on it. Live on it till it runs out. Live on it till your boys are old enough. Live on it till you can do something new. You see, a miracle, I don't know if you caught this, but a miracle happened. And I'm just crazy enough to believe that this book is more than fairy tales. I'm just crazy enough to believe that this book has something to tell me and you. But what happened was God did a miracle with this jar collector. And the truth is, you and me, I don't know what your life is like. I don't know what your problems are. I don't know what your grades are. And frankly, I don't want to know. But here's what I do know is this jar collector, the crazy jar lady, if you really look deep down inside in the mirror when you wake up in the morning, when your cowlick is going crazy, if you look deep enough, you're the jar lady because you need something. Me, I'm a jar lady. That's kind of weird. But I am a jar lady, and I need a miracle. You see, Elisha couldn't do anything for her, but God could. And today, I don't know where you stand, but God can and will do something for you. You see, the story continued, and to recap, it says in verse 2, 2 Kings 4, verse 2, it said, Elisha said to her, what am I going to do for you? Just tell me, what do you have in the house? And she said, your maidservant has nothing in the house but a jar of oil. That's all she had. So he said, go borrow vessels, jars from everywhere, from your neighbors, empty vessels, and don't gather just a few. Verse 4, and when you've come into your house, shut the door behind you and your sons and pour it out into those vessels. Set aside the full ones. Right there, she had a jar with some oil that made jars full of oil. So she went out from him and shut the door behind her. And she said to her sons who brought the vessels, and she poured it out. And it came to pass that when the vessels were full, she said to her son, bring me another vessel. And he said, there aren't any left. So the oil ceased then. And she came and told the man of God. And he said, go sell the oil and pay your debt. You and your sons live on the rest. And that is a story of the jar collector. Didn't have to collect for very long. Just enough. It's crazy because this lady doesn't even have a name. She doesn't have a name, not even one of those weird Bible names. She's just the widow, the woman who had a husband and a couple kids and a need. But for some reason, for the past several thousand years, her story is being told today. Churches around the world. So the question today is this. What do you need? is your back against the wall? Is there something that you've tried to do that just doesn't seem to work? Have you or do you know anybody that has nothing left to lose? It just seems like everything's gone wrong. There's nothing that can go right. Maybe you're in the place and you just know somebody like that, because maybe you're perfectly fine and your life is really good and maybe things are going great for you, and that's cool. But maybe you know somebody who they just don't know how to fix their problems. Well, maybe they need to start collecting jars. You see, this woman did some things right. This woman did some things that you and I need to do. Today, we need to do these things so God can take our little and turn it into a lot. See, Elisha told her to do this. He told her there in verse 3 and 4, he said, look, get as many jars as you can. Get those jars and shut them up in the house. And not in front of people, but what I want you to do is I want you to begin to pour this oil out. You see, this woman, we don't know her name. We don't really even know exactly where she lived. We just know the story about her. And she did what she did privately, changed her life publicly. You see, when you have private obedience, it brings you public results. What does that mean, Pastor Richard? This is what it means. It means the things you do in your heart determine what you do, what happens in your life. Everything's connected. The thoughts you think, everything's connected. The things we watch, everything's connected. The way we feel on the inside, everything's connected. Physically and spiritually. See, if you do something physically, it affects you spiritually. If you do something spiritually, it affects you physically. Everything's connected. It's like spaghetti. Everything touches. You know what I'm saying? It's one big noodly mess. And that's your life. The private and the public, the public and the private. It all works together to make you a bowl of noodles. Here, a bowl of noodles. Whoa. And you're a jar lady. That's what you are today. If you didn't know, if you're looking for your identity, that's what you are. But he says, do this privately. So who are you when nobody's looking? Who are you inside your head? You know, the voice, well, not that voice, but the other voice, the you voice in your head. What are you thinking about to yourself? See, it all starts before game time. You know, I don't know if you guys play sports or if you guys like to watch sports, or maybe there's a team you like, or maybe there's a specific team you want or don't want to go to the Super Bowl. I don't know. I know my team's not going. Sucks to be a Charger fan. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe, don't get me started on the Raiders. You in the back. Don't get me started in the back. All right, Ricardo, man, you make me sick. Get a haircut, hippie. Anyway, you know, if you know anything about sports, you know that the game is never won. Look, the game is never won on the kickoff. You know, the game isn't even won in overtime, and the game is never won in the last few seconds on the field. The game is won in practice. The game is won in practice. If you don't practice, you're not going to win. Look, if you can't perform on the field when it's just you and your team doing your two-a-days, your burpees, doing your drills, doing your runs, you know, doing the calisthenics, you know, eating right. Look. If you don't do this right, look. If you're gonna run a marathon and you eat a bad meal the night before that nobody sees you eating, it will come out of you in the worst way possible the next day on mile 16. I know, because my dad has told me stories. Disgusting. It's okay. No. Need to wash this stage anyway. No. Look, the race isn't won on the start line, and the race isn't even won on the finish line. The race is won in the weeks and months before you ever started racing. That's what happens. That's how you win games. Is in practice. That's how you win the Super Bowl, is at the beginning of the season. Look, if you play sports, you know that you are practicing much more than you're ever on the field in a game. If you're going to be a professional athlete, you will be doing 40 plus hours during season time just practicing, just pitching, just throwing, just running drills. Look, and when you're not practicing, what are you doing? You're in a dark room watching videos and movies of old games. To strategize, eat, drink, sleep. Why? So you can play a two-hour game? I'm going to spend 40 hours 1 week just to play 1 hour and a half, two-hour game? That tells me that the game is not the game. The game is what you do on the practice field. So could it be that miracles don't happen? Listen to me. Because if you go home and your life sucks, don't blame it on God. Look, if you go home and there's problems, don't go home and blame it on God. Because God's trying to tell you something right now. Look, miracles don't happen in church. Chances are you don't need a miracle right now. Because Pastor Richard's getting loud and mean, but you don't need God to shut me up. When you go home and you start arguing with your mom, you need a miracle. When you go to school and there's pressure, you need a miracle. Look, listen to me. When you go home and you find out that there's a pain in your body that you don't know where it came from, that's when you need a miracle. Not right now sitting in a nice cushy chair with air conditioning. Look, you don't need a miracle right now in church. You need a miracle in real life. And I'm going to tell you this. Miracles happen. Listen to me now. I'm going to tell you this. Somebody in this place is going to miss it and you need it. Miracles happen because somebody's praying and talking to God. Because somebody knows the voice of God. Your life will be saved because you know what God's voice sounds like at 10 o'clock at night when you're reading your Bible. So you can recognize it when people are shouting at you and life is loud and it's crazy and things are going wrong. You can understand God's whisper when the entire world is screaming at you. I'm gonna tell you this, guys. Miracles happen because of what you do in private. See, this woman, we don't even know her name, but something amazing happened. Her life was saved. Why? Because she was willing to trust God when the doors were closed and it was just her and her two boys. I love what it says. You guys got it up there in Matthew 6, verse 4 to 6. Go ahead and put it up there if you guys got it. Private obedience brings these results. He says, "That see that your charitable deeds, your good works will be done, what? In secret. If you're done in secret, your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly." See, she trusted God. Not in front of church when people see her lifting her hands or singing really loud on key. She was trusting God when nobody saw it. And God rewarded her. He says this, next verse, verse 5, he says, "And when you pray, don't be like one of the hypocrites, because they love to pray standing in the synagogues, the church of their day, on the corners of the streets, that they can be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward." Look, if you want to look like a Christian, if you want to look like you know God, then that's your reward. People say, "Oh, he must be a pretty good Christian. Oh, he must go to church." That's your reward. It's kind of a lame one. But you, when you pray, go to your room. And when you shut your door, pray to your Father. It's in the secret place. Your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. See, praying at church and worshiping at church is cool. But if you really want to see and experience God's presence, then you'll do it. You'll do this at home. You'll talk to God when nobody else is there to listen to you. When it's so easy to forget. You'll pray when it's easy to fall asleep. You'll read the Bible when you don't understand it. And you'll continue talking to God when it feels like your words hit the ceiling and fall to the ground. That's where miracles come from. When you shut the door and it's you, God, and a bunch of empty jars. And then miracles come. See, it's what you do in the secret that determines what happens publicly. That's just the way it goes. I mean, you know, people who are professional athletes, it started when they were 6 years old playing t-ball. It started when they were in junior high and high school playing junior league. And when they went to college and they busted their ACL or whatever that thing is called in your knee, and they still kept on going. That's why because they did it before they were famous. That's why this woman got this miracle, because when her husband was alive, she loved God. And when her husband died, she still loved God. And when all she had was a room and a house full of useless jars, she still loved God. And then because God saw it privately, he rewarded her publicly. And hey, she could go out and buy herself a fresh new shirt, because girl, she had money and she could be fly now. And she didn't lose her two boys to some slave driver. Private obedience brings public results. And then the next thing is, it takes prep and it takes step. It takes prep and step to get a miracle. It's funny because the number of jars that she filled is the number of empty jars she could collect. Every miracle requires preparation, right? Right? You got to prep for this. Look, if you really believe God, you'll do something. Look, if you say, oh, I'm believing God just to go to college, are you doing your homework? Because if you're not doing your homework, I don't think you're going to college. No matter how much you pray. Unless you find the college of dumb people. You know, no, I'm just kidding. That's rude. I apologize. Darn it, pastor, be a pastor. Okay. Look, it's like hoping to win the lottery and not buying a lottery ticket. God can do miracles, but he don't do dumb miracles. You know, look. If the woman collected two jars, her miracle would be two jars big. If she collected a house full of jars, then it would be a house full of jars big. The amount of preparation she did determines the amount of blessing she got. So what do you prepare? What are you believing God for? What do you need? I hate my mom. Cool. Not cool, but you know what I'm saying. So maybe your miracle is you need to get along with your mom. Or forgive your dad. Or graduate in the next 7 years. You know? What are you doing to prepare that? Are you getting your jars? Are you actually talking to your mom? Or are you slamming the door in her face? Because I don't think that's an empty jar, man. Look. Are you doing your homework? Look. Are you a musician and you want your band to go somewhere, or if you want to make, you know, first trombone or whatever it is, look, you got to put your prep in. You got to gather your empty jars. You got to practice. You got to know your stuff. Look, if you're a musician, if there's music in your heart, then you got to write 1,000 bad songs, because it takes 1,000 bad songs to write one God-inspired good song. It took hundreds, dozens, I don't know, a house full of empty jars before she ever got one full jar. And you gotta fail, and you gotta have a lot of empty things in your life before God can begin to fill it up. You gotta pray a lot of bad prayers before God answers a good prayer. Does that make sense? Does it make sense? I don't know if it makes sense. You gotta... You can only turn a moving boat. That's what I'm saying. If the boat ain't moving, you can turn the wheel, but that sucker ain't going nowhere. You got to put your prep in your step. See, in 2 Kings 4:3, he said, go borrow vessels from everywhere, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. He said, get empty. He could have said, you know what, you need to borrow money from your neighbors, because that makes sense. Ask your mom for $20. He said, no, it's like ask everybody for empty wallets. What am I going to do with an empty wallet? I want the stuff that goes in the wallet. What do I need an empty vessel for? I want the stuff that goes in the vessels. No. He said, find a bunch of empty, useless things, and God will make them useful. Look, some of you guys in here want to be pastors. Are you writing sermons and messages? Because if you're not, you're never going to preach. Some of you want to be businessmen. So have you started your business yet? Well, I got to wait till I get it. What do you mean you got to wait till you get a degree? I knew a kid that had a full ride scholarship to Notre Dame in this youth ministry. And you know what? He made like hundreds of dollars a week selling candy at his school. It was like an underground candy ring, because I don't think he was allowed to. But I'm telling you this, he had like 4 or 5 other kids selling candy for him. and he would collect the money from them and give them a cut. He was like 16 years old, 17 years old. I think he was seriously part of the mafia, because that's how this stuff starts. Brother gonna be a businessman. Some of you guys might even work for him one day. You want to be successful? You want to do something? What are you waiting for? Find your empty vessels. You want to be a strong Christian? Start praying for people. But Pastor Richard, God never answers my prayers. So pray enough prayers and maybe he will one day. God, but I prayed all these. God hasn't answered them yet. So what? Keep on praying. God will answer one day. Where's your jars? Where are your empty jars? You got to prep it, and then you got to step it. See, the miracle didn't happen. She did all this other work. It didn't happen until she started pouring. Mama says she began to pour, and then the jars became full. Some of you guys have been praying too much. You need to start doing it. Faith only works when you do it. See, faith is like a verb. If you don't know what a verb means, do with verbs. You know what I'm saying? Abraham Lincoln, noun. Running, verb. Abraham Lincoln running, whoa, noun verbing. Faith, verb. You, faithing? Hey, now you're doing something. You can have faith, but that's a noun. You don't want noun faith, you want verb faith. You know what I'm saying? Like, what can I do with a noun faith? I can put it on my desk to make sure papers don't fly away. But if I have verb faith, well, then I can get a whole bunch of jars filled in my life. Don't just say it, do it. You believe God for something? Then act like it. Walk like it. Talk like it. Look. Treat yourself like it. You want to stop being depressed? Then believe God for somebody good in your life. You want to stop hating yourself? Okay. But then start living life like somebody who loves himself. If you don't believe it yet, that's okay. That's why you have faith. You're trusting God to get you there. Stop cutting yourself. Stop starving yourself. Stop selling yourself short. And believe God. And one day you'll see you how God sees you. You just got to do faith. Do faith. Do faith. Faith it. See, miracle came when she began to pour it out. When Jesus healed people, he told people who couldn't stand up to stand up. And then they did. See, when Jesus healed the blind people, he said, open your eyes. And they did. When Jesus told the people who had skin diseases, go wash yourself, they did. And what happened? They were clean. Their skin was okay because they did it. What do you need to do? And just stop. Look, you wanting it is not going to get it. You doing it is going to get it. So start doing it. See, this woman had one jar. I mean, could you imagine with this one jar filling up all of these jars up here? Because that's exactly what it was like. These jars were empty. And one half-filled jar, jar after jar after jar after jar after jar after jar after jar, there goes college. There goes your relationship with your dad. Oh, there goes the fact that maybe your aunt is sick. Okay, well, let's what else do we need to pray for? What else do we need to pray for? The fact that your friend hates himself. Okay, there you go. Maybe you have suicidal thoughts. All right, well, God, I'm going to believe you to heal that. Bam. What did it for her? God will do it for you. It's time you start collecting jars. Because I think God's able to. But it only happens. Look, it only happens if you can believe God when nobody else is watching. You don't do this for a show, and you don't do this to make yourself look good. You don't do this because you want to be seen as this person or that person. You don't do it so people can think you're wonderful and fantastic. You do it because God says it. Because if you only do it here in church, it's not going to work. If you only do God here in church, it's not going to work. You got to prep it, and then you got to step it. You got to get your jars, And you got to believe and do what you're believing God for. And that's how it works. If you guys got anything out of God today, let's give him praise.